This is number 0055, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0055. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, meet Mitch Joel, again, president of Twist Image and author of Six Pixels of Separation. How should companies address the idea of business in the world of new media?
Right now, the game is more like brand X comes to you and says, we have X amount of budget for the year to speak to our people in these digital channels. What should we do? And the first thing we tell them is to stop asking what and start asking why. And so what I mean by that is a lot of people say, you know, what should we do on Facebook and what should we do on YouTube? And the real thing we like to sort of take a step back and look at is why. Why should you be on YouTube? Why should you be on Facebook? When you look at why, it forces you to focus on the strategy. We're then looking at business objectives. We're then looking at ROI, and we're able to sort of start at B and then go to A, instead of trying to go the other way around.
Rick Pasqualone is an actor and the starring voice of the new video game VG Mafia 2.
If you are a gamer and you've seen the trend in games lately, it's been to recreate such realism. And I think what the players are really responding to these days is to try to emulate real life and the emotions and the drama of the characters that they're playing. You know, I play Vito Scaletta in Mafia 2. We really try to get people involved, not just in blowing stuff up and doing the missions, which is, you know, fun, but to actually care about the characters and to see what would happen next. And I think it adds just another level of entertainment. And so for me, when you're, you know, taking these words off the page and you're trying to imagine what the world is going to be like after they animate it, it really takes a lot of imagination and training to bring that off. And I think, you know, I think they really accomplished it with Mafia too.
Filmmaker Shirley Petrepah, whose new film is called Roxy. What's the film about?
At the end of the day, what you're seeing happening is, you know, we follow this guy for a little while. You don't really know what's going on. You see most of the film through the POV of the dog, whose name is Roxy. It turns out that he's taking a trip to commit suicide, checks himself into a hotel, and proceeds to submerge himself into a tub filled with water. You know, at that point, you think that it's all about suicide, but it really isn't. It's about everything that surrounds the act of suicide. It also speaks to, I guess, everybody who's ever really thought or felt that the world is sort of unbearable, or their ills or their problems are unbearable. And we've always I feel like a lot of people have been there, even if we don't really seriously think about, you know, taking that step to ending our lives. You know, it's sort of like, you know, I feel like you can identify with a lot of people.
And of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0055, is Richard Dagenet, television news anchor at Global Montreal. You can check out Global Montreal on cable channel 3, Illico channel 8, UHF 46, Bell satellite channel 234. And you could also check out Richard's blog at rickatick.blogspot.com. That's rickatick, that's R-I-C-K-A-T-I-C-K, rickatick.blogspot.com. And thank you very much, Richard, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File. And before we get to the Stuff File news, one very quick note. I want to welcome aboard, literally, those who are flying via Taiwan's national carrier China Airlines, because as of September the 1st, the Stuff File program is being offered on China Airlines for their in-flight entertainment system for long-haul Dynasty flights. Now, the routes are from Taipei to Sydney via Bangkok, also Taipei to London, Taipei to Amsterdam, Taipei to Zurich, Taipei to Johannesburg, Taipei to Dubai via Singapore, Taipei to San Francisco via Los Angeles, Taipei to Vancouver, Taipei to New York, and Taipei to Rio via Mexico City. So welcome aboard all those listening to the Stuff File on China's Airlines, Taiwan's national air carrier. It's part of the PCJ Media Network, and the PCJ schedule will be published in China Airlines In-Flight magazine, which is entitled Dynasty. Welcome, folks. Hope you enjoy the show and the other shows from the PCJ Media Network. Now, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Little bit of a kind of history lesson here. The Yeonanan tribe on the South Pacific island of Tanna believe their true ancestral god is Britain's Prince Philip, based on photographs of him with the Queen during a 1974 visit to Tanna's mother nation of Vanuatu, and believed he promised to return for good on his 89th birthday, which just happened to be this past June 10th. Now, although the prince has kept in touch, he failed to show up for the grand celebration, but fortunately, Scottish University student Mark Rayner was on the island working as a volunteer teacher and stepped in for the prince, which meant that he, and not the Duke of Edinburgh, got to wear the formal ceremonial penis sheath appropriate for such special occasions. On to Berlin. You know, admittedly, the stereotype about Germany is that they can be a bit anal when it comes to rules and regulations. So here's a story that just adds to that aura. A German company that fired a man for the theft of 1.0 euro cents, that's about 2 cents US, worth of electricity, had no grounds for sacking him, a court ruled, dismissing the firm's appeal against his reinstatement. Network administrator Oliver Beale lost his job after charging his Segway, you know, those two-wheeled electric vehicles. Yeah, he was charging it at work back in May of 2009. After he connected the vehicle to the firm's power source for about an hour and a half, his boss asked him to remove it. 12 days later, Beale found himself without a job. The court ruled that dismissal was disproportionate to the offense, especially given the minimal electricity cost involved, the plaintiff's 19-year employment by the company, and the fact that other employees charged mobile phones and digital photo frames at the firm's expense without any punishment whatsoever. Firing somebody who worked for the company for 19 years because they used 2 cents worth of electricity? Nice. Nice. Okay, on to the state of Washington. A hiker in Blewett Pass shot himself in the butt when he put a handgun in his back pocket. The Chilean County Sheriff's Office said the 52-year-old Snohomish man had moved his .40-caliber handgun from its holster to his back pocket to see if that position would be more comfortable. Apparently, it's not. The gun fired a bullet down his left buttock and left leg, coming to rest just above the knee. He was treated at Central Washington Hospital in Wenatchee. Okay, here's a story that involves new media, how people do things crazily, not thinking with Twitter and Facebook and the like. A judge removed a juror from a trial in suburban Detroit after the young woman wrote on Facebook that the defendant was guilty. The problem? The trial wasn't over. Hadley Johns, who lives near Detroit, was found in contempt when she had a day off from the trial, and before the prosecution finished its case, she wrote on Facebook that it was, quote, gonna be fun to tell the defendant they're guilty. Without Johns, by the way, the jury convicted the defendant of a felony but couldn't agree on a separate misdemeanor charge. Some people just aren't that bright. You know, she almost made it to the idiot of the day. Almost. But she's not. That's coming up later. Okay, for one golfer in Irvine, California, his cry shouldn't have been "four," it should have been "fire!" The golfer at the Shady Canyon Golf Course in Irvine landed a shot in the rough, and on his next swing, his club snagged a rock, causing a spark that lit the rough ablaze and eventually required 150 firefighters to come to the scene. Fire officials say the fire burned through the rough, into vegetation next to the course, and then over two dry, brushy hillsides. No charges were filed against the golfer because, fortunately in America, it's not illegal to suck at golf. And finally, in this portion of the Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, yet again, folks, we remind you that calling 911 is reserved for only true emergencies. That would not include calling 911 to tell police you need a towel and a hug. That's what Mark Eccleson allegedly did in Beaverton, Oregon. Police actually responded and found Mark in a private hot tub at the Four Seasons Rec Center at about 7 a.m. Making things worse for himself, Mark also claimed to be the Washington County Sheriff. In his 911 call, he said, "Believe it or not, I am the sheriff of Washington County, and I've been in this hot tub here, I don't know, at least 10 hours. Mark said he was cold from being in the water. He asked police to bring him a towel, a hot chocolate, and also said he needed a hug." Well, everyone needs a hug, but I digress. Police say prior to making his 911 call, Mark climbed the locked fence to get into the pool area. Officers said he also admitted to using drugs daily, and they found marijuana and a pipe in his back pocket. Eccleston was arrested on charges of criminal trespass and improper use of 911. He could have almost become the idiot of the day, but he's not. We'll get to that much, much later. In the meantime, let's get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? You know, it's the first year anniversary of this show. We started the show a year ago, right about now, and I thought it would be fitting to have back on the program the very first guest we had last year. He was kind of the inspiration in my starting this online program. His name is Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image, the author of Six Pixels of Separation. Mitch is also a blogger, podcaster, and popular guest speaker who connects with people worldwide by sharing his marketing insights on digital marketing and personal branding. This year, Marketing Magazine named Twist Image one of the top 10 agencies in Canada. Now, he's on the line with us via the wonderful world of Skype-to-Skype communication. Welcome back to the show, Mitch.
You're still doing this?
Yes, I am, sir. And it's all because of you.
You crazy kids.
And I got to admit, you were right at the very beginning, and the audience has grown quite a bit since we first started this program. So I kind of have you to thank for this.
Great content finds its audience. It's all you, man.
Thank you very much. Now, some of the things we talked about last year when we had you on the show, I want to touch back on again. People online, it's almost like the gold rush. People heading to where they think the gold is. But the thing that was very interesting about the gold rush is, yes, some people got very rich, most people didn't, but the people who made the most money were not the panhandlers who were out there looking for the gold. It was the people who sold the the pans and the pickaxes.
Yeah, and I think that it's changed a little bit in terms of that model, just because in the end, what we still have are platforms that are fairly open and free, and you know, much like traditional radio, it's a white space, and it's just a question of how well someone is or how good someone is at filling it. And I think that democratization of the platform is what makes it truly interesting. So, you know, I can have a blog that people love and are connected to, but it's still a very small niche in the grander scheme of things. My traffic pales in comparison to that of the Huffington Post, and it even pales in comparison when looking at a site like Boing Boing, which is more, you know, sort of tech gadgety. That's the thing. I'm able to use the platform to find my audience, and as insignificant as it would seem in mass media traditional numbers, it's actually quite significant in terms of impact and what it means to the growth of my business.
I guess one of the things that gives it a level playing field in the world of business is that in traditional business, big guys can come along. If you owned a store and then somebody opened a big box store beside you, you were probably wiped off the map. But here online, you can be next to the big guys and survive next to the big guys.
You know, if you look at the model of Amazon, it's really interesting because it speaks exactly to that. And what you find more often than not is these small guys are actually also selling within Amazon. It's like they're doing their best to compete with themselves. And what we see is, you know, a very decentralized distribution channel that doesn't really look like ones we would see in, let's say, the retail environment as we knew it today, where people are saying, listen, my job isn't to be the only person who does this, selling XYZ or COG, whatever it might be. My job is to make whatever it is I sell as findable as possible. And the only way to do that is to be in as many valuable places as where my potential customers or clients might be.
Now, I was talking to a buddy of mine, David Eady, who is a financial advisor and also works very close with SiteSell and the folks that run that organization. And he's actually been to, he's listened to your book because he has the audiobook and he's heard you speak. And he asked a question, so I thought I'd pass it along. And that is, what do you think is holding people back from jumping into new media? Because there are those who are somewhat hesitant.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I wrote the book is to really sort of get those who aren't engaged to take a look at it. And I think, you know, it's just like anything else in life. It's the uncomfort of the unknown. It's foreign. It's strange. People always ask me, like, how do you know what's coming out and how do you know what's going to be popular? And the answer for me is usually, if it feels weird and foreign and uncomfortable, that's usually what it is. Because otherwise, nothing new would really come out. And I think it's just that. People have their traditional ways of doing things. They have a way in which they're set up. And when something new is available to them, it seems weird and awkward. And so people tend to shy away from that. It's the old analogy, Peter. You don't wake up in the morning. You know, imagine if every morning you wake up, I moved your coffee maker. How would you feel the next, you know, in 3-4 days? You'd want me murdered is pretty much the answer. And that's just these new worlds, right? It just, someone moved the coffee maker and people don't know how to deal with it.
So with things changing so quickly, let's look at your company, your business, and you being a blogger. Do you have to quickly adapt all the time? Is it changing that rapidly? How different is what you do today in September of 2010 than it was a year ago or a year before that?
I like to say that things move really quickly, and then at the same time, they move extremely slowly. And that's the sort of paradox. You know, here at my agency, Twist Image, we now have well over 100 employees and offices in Montreal and Toronto, and have grown, you know, well over 50% every single year for the past many years. Actually, it's been really, really healthy, and I'm really thankful for that. And the truth is that at its core, some of the channels may change, new things come in, whether it's a Foursquare or a Twitter or the growth of Facebook, but fundamentally the idea stays the same. And the idea really for us here has been about helping brands make these real interactions with real human beings happen and be functional through the online channels. So, you know, I like to use the analogy of, you know, if you're talking to a TV advertiser, you would say to me, like, hey, are you guys still advertising on Love Boat? And they'd be like, no. Okay, but you're still advertising on TV. There's new stations, there's specialty channels, there's cable, there's other things. So it's very similar to that. The core model, though, doesn't change of what we're trying to do here. We're trying to get brands to really connect with people through these online channels. And for us, online is obviously web and mobile and stuff like that.
You talked about advertising, and that's another thing that I had a chance to talk to a lot of people about over the last year when it comes to being online. And it seems to be that there's people who are jumping in. It's almost like the dot-com rush of a few years ago. It seems to be there are people who are jumping in trying to sell advertising or get their advertising out there online and not really knowing if they're getting the bang for their buck. It's like a leap of faith, and then there are some who just won't leap at all.
Yeah, but it's like that with everything, right? At the end of the day, you sort of try and figure out which platforms make the most sense and which ones work. And there's the old advertising saying that, you know, half of my advertising works, I just don't know which half, by John Wanamaker. I think that the big distinction for me in the online channels is that it's less about advertising and more about marketing and creating those relationships. And I also think it's more about how marketing has shifted to become also a bit of a function of publishing. So, for example, you know, right now you are marketing yourself. You're not taking a billboard out to say, hey, listen to the great voice that I have being Peter Anthony Holder. You're actually creating a product that has valuable content. You're publishing content, and that's the way in which you're marketing yourself. So I think the big thing is really defining that definition between marketing and advertising too.
So where do you see, and I'm talking about the big boys now, because those are the ones who always sit back and think, well, I'm just going to steamroll my way into the new media world and make a mint. If you were to, and I know you have an opportunity to do this because you speak to a lot of companies, if you were to talk to a Fortune 500 company, what's the most important thing you would tell them about being online, and would that be different from what you would tell a mom-and-pop operation?
Traditionally, no. And actually, I mean, that really is what we spend our days doing here at Twist Image, speaking to big brands, trying to figure it out. And I think the difference is there's been a paradigm shift where we're not really convincing them that online is important. That hasn't really been the game that I've played in many, many years. Right now, the game is more like brand X comes to you and says, we have X amount of budget. for the year to speak to our people in these digital channels, what should we do? And the first thing we tell them is to stop asking what and start asking why. And so what I mean by that is a lot of people say, you know, what should we do on Facebook and what should we do on YouTube? And the real thing we like to sort of take a step back and look at is why. Why should you be on YouTube? Why should you be on Facebook? When you look at why, it forces you to focus on the strategy. We're then looking at business objectives. We're then looking at ROI, and we're able to sort of start at B and then go to A, instead of trying to go the other way around. And I think that that's a lesson that isn't just good for big business, it's good for any business, which is ask yourself, you know, who are the people here that can actually do this stuff? Is it text, images, audio, video? What are we good at producing? And then why? So why are we going to do this? And then from the why, how are we going to be different? How are we going to be unique? How are we going to add value? Where are the people currently? What are they doing? You ask those real sort of baseline questions, and you can pull at least a semblance of a strategy out of there that'll help you push it forward.
I mentioned in the beginning, in the introduction, that Marketing Magazine named your company one of the top 10 agencies in Canada. I also mentioned your book, Six Pixels of Separation. We're here talking about marketing online. So is there anything I left out about Mitch Joel and your company that you want the world to know?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, a lot of people see the blogger and the author and the columnist and stuff like that. And the truth of the matter is everything I do is really tied into Twist Image. I have, you know, three equal business partners. We have 100 plus employees. And my whole goal in being a blogger and a podcaster and a journalist and an author is to draw attention to the fact that companies need to be paying attention to this digital marketing space. And there are actual people out there who can help them get them there faster. And that's what I'm doing. A lot of people see the personal brand, and what I don't think they realize is it's really a business development mechanism for the team to grow and to work with great clients.
And as my buddy David can attest to, not only is Six Pixels of Separation a good book, but it's a great audiobook. So those who don't necessarily have the time to read, but spend a lot of time on the road, either driving or on flights or on trains, it's a good way to pass the time, especially if they're into marketing of any kind, because there's great tips involved. I thank you very, very much, Mitch, for being on the program with us, and maybe we'll have you back at the beginning of our third year.
I'd be happy to come back annually for you, Peter.
Thank you very much, Mitch. You take care.
You too.
Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image and the author of Six Pixels of Separation. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0055, and you'll find links to Mitch's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet actor Rick Pasqualone. Plus, we'll also meet the filmmaker behind the movie Roxy. And, of course, there's an idiot of the day, plus lots and lots and lots of stuff. Let's get right back to the stuff right here, right now. A 50-year-old businessman in Italy has earned the title of creepiest ex-boyfriend in the world. he was so hung up on his ex-girlfriend after she dumped him that he paid $18,000 to recreate her as a life-size sex doll. Oh, nothing odd about that, huh? Our obsessed friend put together a collection of photos of his ex and told Italian adult toy maker Diego Bortolin that, quote, "I want it just like her, but with bigger boobs." Bortolin makes his living creating extremely realistic sex dolls at a factory behind his shop named Temptations. Normally, he charges about $5,000 for the dolls, but in this particular case, it was more expensive because, as he put it, we had to replicate everything right down to the shape of her nails and teeth. Wow. I wonder how the ex-girlfriend feels about this, especially now that the story has made the news. Everyone knows, and most importantly, she knows, he has a sex doll that looks exactly like her. That is creepy. Okay, on to Amsterdam. Police arrested an 82-year-old man after he bit and kicked officers who had arrived to mediate a dispute with a neighbor over a domestic pet. The officers arrived at his house in a central Dutch village to talk to the neighbor when the man was leaving on his bicycle, police said. Asked to identify himself, the man got off his bike and started to kick and bite the officers. The man was taken to the police station and was released after questioning. I wonder if those were his own teeth or if he had dentures. 82. You got a good grip there. Anyway, on to Montana. General rule of thumb, when looking to buy marijuana, don't text the sheriff. Authorities said a Helena teen hit a wrong number and inadvertently sent a message to Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton saying, "Hey dog, do you have a 20 I can buy right now?" A detective pretending to be a dealer organized a meeting at a time when the boy knew he and another teen would be at a particular store. The detective spotted two teenage boys and one of the boys' father, who was unaware of what was going on. They were spotted at a store. He called the phone number three times to make sure that he had the right person. Dutton said when the detective showed the teen his badge, one of the boys fainted. No citations were issued after the parents of the boys, who were 15 and 16, got involved. There you go. On to Pennsylvania. Police said an Erie area woman somehow managed to zap both herself and her brother with a stun gun during a drunken dispute. Darlene Nuwara, age 45, will have a hearing October 18th on charges including driving under the influence, disorderly conduct for fighting, and public drunkenness in the August 8th incident. State police said they responded to a disturbance outside an Erie area store about 6 p.m. to find that Nuwara had been arguing with her brother and stunned him with the device, then accidentally shocked herself with it. Police said she was intoxicated and had several unopened bottles of liquor in the vehicle with her three sons, who were not hurt. Nice parenting. Nice sibling rivalry, too, by the way. On to Wyoming. The powdery substance that Wyoming Highway Patrol troopers found in a ziplocked closed bag during a recent traffic stop didn't turn out to be the drugs after all that they thought they were. Sergeant Stephen Townsend of the patrol said that when troopers pulled over two men in a car, they found small amounts of marijuana and drug paraphernalia and thought the bag might hold illegal drugs. Troopers contacted the car's owner, the girlfriend of one of the men, and asked her. The woman told troopers the baggie held her grandmother's cremated ashes. She said they had been very close and that she always keeps the ashes in her car. Wow. Townsend said troopers put the ashes back. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, if you listen to this show regularly, you know my feelings towards cats. They're evil. Little pieces of evil plotting the demise of mankind. Here's the latest installment. Diane Buckaloo said she felt sick when she woke up and realized two rings she'd left in the bathroom on the bathroom counter the night before were gone. She and her husband Carl got married in Las Vegas a month ago. realized their cat Jinx, and the cat's name was Jinx, so what are the odds here, eh? Had batted them into the toilet. One was an amethyst ring, and the other was Diane's 4-carat, $40,000 diamond engagement ring. Well, at 6:30 a.m., Carl called Mr. Reuter, which has a drain camera. Two technicians dug a 3-foot hole near the front door of the Buckaloo's home in South Haven, Mississippi, cut the drain pipe, and asked Carl to flush. Jackpot! A technician's hands emerged from the muddy water with both rings. Sure, it's mud, huh? Okay. Carl then wrote them a check for $895.20, which he said he was glad to do. Okay, so there's no punishment for the cat in this whole story? Hello? It all started with a cat putting these things in the toilet. That's all I'm saying. Evil. Little pieces of evil. Okay? Let's get to our next guest. On the line with us right now is actor Rick Pascalone. You might not know the name or even the face, but if you play video games, you certainly know his voice. He is a video game voice god. He stars in the new VG Mafia 2 as Vito Scaletta, and he joins us now from California. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
Very, very busy guy. You do video games, as I've mentioned, and even though I said most people might not know your face, you have done television, you have done Broadway, so you've done quite a few things. Where did this start for you as far as acting was concerned?
This all started in New York. I grew up in New York, and after college, I came back to the city and, you know, just decided I'm going to give this a shot, and went back to my hometown and just started taking class and started working. And, you know, I was very fortunate that I had some success right away and off Broadway and Broadway, and that brought me to California, and it's been a run ever since.
But as I mentioned, you are a video game voice god. When a lot of people get into acting, in the forefront of their mind, I'm sure they're not thinking of video games, especially considering that's relatively new media for a lot of people. How did that come to be, and how different is that from what you were initially trained to do, or how does your training as a stage actor help?
And that's a great question, Peter. It's to go backwards, the stage training and the theater training is so essential, I think, to bring these games to life. If you are a gamer and you've seen the trend in games lately, it's been to recreate such realism. And I think what the players are really responding to these days is, you know, to try to emulate real life and the emotions and the drama of the characters that they're playing. You know, I play Vito Scaletta in Mafia 2, and, you know, we really try to get people involved, not just in blowing stuff up and doing the missions, which is, you know, fun, but to actually care about the characters and to see what would happen next. And I think it adds just another level of entertainment. And so for me, when you're, you know, taking these words off the page and you're trying to imagine what the world is going to be like after they animate it, it really takes a lot of imagination and training to bring that off. And I think we really accomplished it with Mafia 2.
From an actor's point of view, when you're actually doing the work, I said it's like new media, but in a way it's actually a bit of a throwback, because going back in time, when it comes to stage performers, they made some of the best radio actors back in the day when mm-hmm. there was a lot of radio plays.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, unfortunately, because of the technical aspects of the game, you don't always get to interact with the other actors as you're recording. Sometimes you're doing these things in a room by yourself and you're taking things out of context. You know, you're talking about a 700 to 800 page script with some of these games, and you might be starting on page 700 because that's where the director feels like starting that day, and you have to know where you're coming from and who you're talking to. We were very fortunate with Mafia 2. We had a really great group of actors, and we actually got to be in the room together and actually play off each other and improvise and add to the script, and it brought it to life in such a way that I think people are really responding to it.
Now, we mentioned VG Mafia 2, but you've done several games besides that. Dead to Rights, Retribution, Army of Two, The 40th Day, Prison Break, mm-hmm. The Conspiracy, and the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you when you come across, because video games are very, very popular, certainly with kids, certainly with boys. What's it like when you come across people playing the game and you know you're the voice?
I try to keep silent, actually, because it's just, it's funny to me to hear my voice coming out of a character on the screen and, you know, and people running around and, like I said, you know, doing all these different scenarios with my voice echoing in their head. I find that very amusing. But it's funny, like, you know, you, like you said, I mean, coming from doing TV and theater where it's all about face recognition. And for me, you're right. I mean, people don't know my name, but I get a lot of, I know you from somewhere. Where do I know you from? It's either from TV or you installed my toilet last week. I don't know where, but it's a kick. It really is. And, you know, my nephews get a big kick out of saying that their uncle is the voice coming out of the television.
Now, you mentioned you do some television. You have a recurring role on All My Children, and it's another difficult form of entertainment. A lot of pages of dialogue in a television script for a daytime soap, and it's here today, gone tomorrow.
Totally, yeah. It moves so fast. They're shooting an incredible amount of dialogue, and you know, the main characters on the show, some of them who've been there for 20-30 years, you know their characters down by heart. They can do the stuff in their sleep. You know, you come on as a new character, which I am. I'm coming on All My Children as this new character, Charles Michelson, and it's intense. You know, you want to bring your A game, and you know it's but you know, honestly, and they're great to work with. Everybody was really receptive, and it's a fun show.
It's interesting. You recently, or you not recently, but you came from New York from stage, and the show itself, All My Children, recently moved from New York to L.A. It's almost like Kismet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of my very first professional jobs as an actor, I don't even know if you call it an acting job, I was doing background work on All My Children, and that's what got me my after card and kind of kicked me off into working. And now, you know, all these years later, to come back on the show out here in LA is it's a bit of kismet.
You've also done other shows like Family Guy, Desperate Housewives, CSI New York, Without a Trace, and again the list goes on. When you first started acting, was this how you envisioned your career going? And did you have an initial game plan, or you just went where the job takes you?
Yeah, you know, it's so far-fetched to think that, oh, one day I'm going to be playing a Klingon on Star Trek, you know, and you just go, wait, no, you can't possibly envision that happening. But back in New York, it was all about, you know, trying to do theater and trying to break into movies and you know, going to class and studying and just trying to develop the craft. And then, you know, coming out to LA and you're just thrown into this crazy world where one day you're a Klingon and one day you're a lawyer.
So you grow up in New York. One day little Rick says, I want to be an actor. What do the friends say? What do the family say when you decided this is what you want to do?
they went, really? Really? Can you do anything else? It's a tough sell, no question about it. My father was a professional musician, so he understood the need to, you know, express yourself as an artist, because he certainly did. He was an amazing, and still is, an amazing musician. So he was the one that said, you know, if you have to do it, but do it to the best of your abilities. Get trained, get qualified, you know, do your work. And everybody else said, wow, really? Okay. Good luck starving.
So what about the career goals? Are there things that you really want to do that you haven't had the opportunity to do yet or you're working toward?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Peter. I think, you know, it's, I mean, honestly, the goal always is just to keep working. I mean, I love what I do. It's a blessing to say that you get to do a job that you love, and I think very few people get to say that. So, you know, the goal is to keep working. Obviously, I would love to do, I'd love to be a regular on a series. I would love to keep doing voice work. It's a lot of fun, and obviously to get into features. I've started producing my own movies, and I'm hoping to, you know, get that going too and start kind of take control of my own destiny, so to speak, and just keep working, man. Just keep working, whatever this is.
Excellent. Well, you have a very interesting and varied career, which certainly can't hurt. That's for sure. And,
absolutely.
And a fan base, even if they don't know your name, a fan base that crosses a wide swath based on all the things that you do. Congratulations on that. Again, people can
check
out Mafia 2, which is the latest game that you're on, but there are all a series of other games as well. And I thank you very, very much, Rick, for being on the program with us. Again, tell us the character you're playing on All My Children for those who are big soap fans.
Absolutely. The character's name's Charles Michelson. He's a new character coming on for a few episodes in September. It's on All My Children. And also look out next year, in 2011, for a movie called Hop. I also have a role in that as an animated creature, and it's with Russell Brand and James Marsden. It's going to be a great family movie, and that'll be out in 2011.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much, Rick, for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Actor Rick Pasqualone. He's in the video game VG Mafia 2. And also, starting this month, check him out on All My Children on ABC. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones. Today, I'm going to talk about a modern convenience we often take for granted, the ATM money machine. Think about how many times you or your family has used an ATM this summer. Maybe you've needed cash to pay for dinner during vacation, or just to buy a snack at a local convenience store. Whatever the reason, this 24-hour access we have to our cash makes our lives a lot easier. Unfortunately, this kind of self-service banking could become a lot less convenient because of abusive lawsuits. A Georgia lawyer is now suing banks, saying that they're responsible for crimes that take place while someone's using an ATM machine. He says banks should pay up if someone gets approached at an ATM, and he's already forced a couple of court settlements that could lead to a tidal wave of lawsuits. Let's be fair. If that happens, banks may decide it's just not worth the risk of being sued for putting ATMs where they're convenient for us. The economic impact would be devastating, and we really wouldn't be any safer. It's happened with other products, and I'm concerned it could happen with ATMs, too. Find out more. Go to my website at bobdirigojones.com.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We will still have a visit with the filmmaker behind the movie, Roxy. And also, of course, there's always an idiot of the day. We'll get to that a little later on. But I have one more Stuff File story to get to before we get to our final guest on this edition of the Stuff File program. A Japanese man drove the wrong way down an expressway for 90 kilometers and broke through 5 police barricades because his cat had died. There we go with the cats again. I tell you, evil. Little pieces of evil. Tsutomu Mizumoto, 31, was arrested on the northern island of Hokkaido. Police said they responded to an emergency call at about 5:45 a.m. about a car driving the wrong way on a motorway near the city of Utaru. They spotted the vehicle 15 minutes later and pursued the driver, ordering him to stop. Mizumoto ignored them and drove on, smashing through 5 emergency blockades and passing through a toll gate. He finally stopped at about 7:15 when police detained him. He's quoted as telling police, "I was sad that my pet cat died, I wanted to do something crazy. Well, buddy, mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. Okay, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. On the line with us right now is filmmaker Shirley Petrepaw. She is a multi-hyphenate director of the short film Roxy, which is making the rounds at film festivals around the world. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you made the short film Roxy, and I mentioned you're multi-hyphenate. You've basically done everything, right?
Yeah, it sort of turned out that way, I was, you know, using every excuse in the book not to make my own films for a time because there was just a lot of fear, you know, being an artist and, you know, putting yourself out there like that, even though I knew I had to. So it just dawned on me at some point, you know, my friends were encouraging me to, you know, just do it myself because they knew that I was able to. So, yeah, I kind of just picked up my camera and decided to, you know, take their advice and do it. So now, that's how it came about.
Now, you've done this on a shoestring budget. And
yeah.
And you've directed this film, produced it. I believe you did the sound for it.
Correct, yes.
You edited the entire film.
I did.
Yeah. So I have to ask, are you a control freak?
I guess it would sound as though I am, but it would probably be difficult then later to put people in those roles. But, you know, ideally I would love to be working with experts in all the different departments of film so that, you know, as a creative process, I would be able to get input and, you know, possibly make the project better. So ideally I would love to be working with, you know, other people, other artists in completing a film.
Tell us what the film Roxy is about.
At the end of the day, what you're seeing happening is, you know, we follow this guy for a little while. You don't really know what's going on. You see most of the film through the POV of the dog, whose name is Roxy. And it turns out that he is, he's taking a trip to commit suicide, checks himself into a hotel, and proceeds to submerge himself into a tub filled with water. At that point, you think that it's all about suicide, but it really isn't. It's about everything that surrounds the act of suicide. It also speaks to, I guess, everybody who's ever really thought or felt that the world is sort of unbearable or their ills or their problems are unbearable. And we've always I feel like a lot of people have been there. And even if we don't really seriously think about, you know, taking that step to ending our lives, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I feel like it can identify with a lot of people. So I'm not really sure if I completely answered your question. I just feel like it's not about one thing. The film is sort of about a lot of things. And, you know, to me, films that I want to make, I want to be multi sort of faceted to the people that watch it, to the audience that views it.
Okay, so as you described, the topic matter can be, for lack of a better term, a little bit on the dark side. So what is the genesis of this story?
Well, I think it started, I've always dealt with the idea of suicide. You know, I guess I am a little bit of a dark person. I've never really, you know, thought seriously about it, but it sort of, you know, ping-pongs around my mind sometimes when things aren't looking that great in my life. So the idea of suicide has always been sort of in my brain. How I came up with this idea was that I was working with my resources. I had a dog, a man, and, you know, I wanted to put them into a story, and I guess I just drew from just, you know, a recurring idea that I have in my mind that I could tell a story about suicide. So it was more resources before actual story.
So from the time that you had the idea for the story and the point where you actually had a finished film, what's the time frame there?
Oh, I would say about a month. We shot over a couple of days, and then, you know, I was just sort of in post. And probably the thing that took the longest was going out and recording all the sounds because it was shot silently. And, you know, Foley or, you know, putting sounds into a movie is not something that I've ever done before. So that took a lot of effort. Just, you know, realizing that the world is not quiet and, you know, footsteps sound differently on different surfaces and stuff like that. So About a month, I would say.
So, and you've now, as I mentioned earlier, you're making the rounds of film festivals. I understand you have it in the Santa Monica International Film Festival, the Mill Valley Film Festival in Northern California, the Marabella International Film Festival in Spain, and the Locarno International Film Festival in Switzerland. How did you manage to get your film in all those festivals?
I don't know. You know, I guess it's one part luck and one part just, you know, researching lots of different festivals, because these days there are just a trillion festivals, and sort of picking and choosing the ones that I thought might like my film. I guess that's it. That's how I did it.
One of the things that's interesting about independent creative people, be it authors or, in your case, filmmakers or musicians, is there's so much energy and time spent in the creative process of putting whatever the project is together, in your case, a film. But then later, when the film is finished, there's the business part, basically, of show business, and that is, well, what you're doing right now. You have to promote the film. Do you find that's a foreign concept for you, being the creative type that you are? Do you find that harder than making the film, or do you enjoy it and find it a challenge?
I absolutely think it's the hardest part of myself for me to be part of this aspect of it, because, you know, I'm the sort of person that just wants to stay in the lab, you know, do the work, finish the work, and then kind of move on and do something new. So it's strange to even be spending so much time talking about Roxy so much after it's been completed. But I do recognize this aspect of the business, and I guess maybe I have to get used to it, or, you know, I'm not really sure. It's been difficult. It is a little weird for me to have to be a part of.
You mentioned you did the film basically as a silent movie and added the sound to it later. That's mm-hmm. kind of taking a shortcut, as it were. What kinds of shortcuts did you have to do in making this movie besides that?
It was less of a short. Yeah, I guess you can call it a shortcut. You know, basically the camera that I used does not have sort of adequate sound inputs for me to have recorded sound on set, so it would have been a challenge to have to bring in another person who I wouldn't be able to pay in order to capture the sound. So what are the shortcuts that I take? I guess using friends. The actor in the film is a really good friend of mine, and the dog is, in fact, his, and so I'm very familiar with him as well as the dog. And so, again, you know, for me it was the challenge was finding what was available to me. I guess that became my shortcut, because actually making the film is the hardest part in terms of, you know, the filmmaking process.
So now that it's out there and it's in festivals, what's your hope and dream for this film?
I appreciate the support. I love that people are enjoying it and screening it. I just hope that people get to see it, and, you know, hopefully, you know, they'll want to see more from me. You know, I'd love to do a feature, you know, very, very soon. You know, I have some ideas brewing. And if need be, I'll do it on my own again. You know, that's going to be a little daunting, but, you know, if I have to, I'll do it. I'll do it on my own.
And how can one see the film, Roxy?
Well, currently it is going to be at these festivals. So there's, I'm not posting the entire link online. There is a trailer on my website, linked from my website, isara.net/Roxy. And hopefully after it's done its run through the festivals in the next year, I'll be posting it online.
Well, good luck with the movie, and thank you very much, Shirley, for taking the time to be on the program with us, because as I said earlier, you are a multi-hyphenate, so clearly you're very busy.
Well, thank you so much for calling me and having me on. Thank you so much.
Filmmaker Shirley Petrepaw. Her short film is called Roxy. You can check out her website, which is www.issara.net, and Issara is spelled Issara. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is, again, show number 0055, and you'll find links that will take you to Shirley's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and as mentioned, almost done with this edition of the show. But as promised, there's always an idiot of the day, so let's get right to it, shall we?
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the day.
Carol Costello, age 69, went to the Walmart in Daytona Beach, Florida, because everything happens at Walmart. She went there to buy some money orders. She had thousands of dollars in cash on her, but they didn't have what she wanted, so she left. Now, there was a man in line behind her, and he followed. She got into her car and drove off with the man right behind. When she stopped, the man ran up to her car, pointed a gun, but her door was locked. He tried to break a window with the gun, but failed. So he jumped on the hood and broke a hole in her windshield with the pistol, and then dropped the pistol through the hole. The gun landed in Costello's lap, so she grabbed it and pointed it at him. The man ran, but not before dropping his cell phone. Police were able to trace the phone to Raymond Shepard, age 25, and he was arrested for attempted robbery. Okay, so here's some clown who can't even break a window if he tried. Good for the lady, by the way. Good for Carol, because it's dangerous what was happening here. But still, he's trying to rob her, trying to break into the car, can't break a window, breaks through the windshield, drops the gun inside, drops his cell phone inside, runs away. One reason and one reason only why Raymond Shepard, age 25, would do something so stupid? Simple. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0055. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information on all of our guests by just following the links. Go to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0055. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can find me at facebook.com/paholder and twitter.com/paholder. Hope to see you back here on our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, aboard Taiwan's national carrier China Airlines for long-haul dynasty flights, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand and Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.